I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The Heaviness of Things That Float is a new novel from the writer Jennifer Manuel. In it, she explores the relationship between First Nations communities and non-natives in a story that takes place in a remote community in British Columbia. The Tawakin Reserve has about 100 people, and Bernadette lives on the outskirts serving the community as its nurse. Early on in the book, which I've just started, you get a sense of the isolation, how far everything is, as well as how far the people are, especially Bernadette, who spent her career there, yet as she retires, feels unsettled. A young man named Chase Charlie, whom Bernadette loves like a son, goes missing as the community is thrown into upheaval. Questions about knowing one another arise. I'll get Ms. Manuel, who joins me now, to tell us about her book and the themes therein, as well as the TRC Reading Challenge. By the 21st of June, she wants at least 1,000 people to read the Truth and Reconciliation Commission summary report. We'll find out how many people thus far have taken up the challenge and why we ought to read this report. Jennifer Manuel has won awards for her short fiction, and she's been published in Prism International, The Fiddlehead, Room Magazine, and Little Fiction. She lives in Duncan, B.C., where she joins me from today. The website for more is at jenmanuel.ca. The site to sign up to read the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's report is at trcreadingchallenge.com. I've pledged to read it. The Heaviness of Things That Float is published by Douglas and McIntyre. Please welcome to the Planta Online program Jennifer Manuel. Ms. Manuel, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So before we talk about your book, I want to talk about the TRC Reading Challenge. I pledged to read it after you sent me a tweet challenging me to do so. I thought it was such a good way to get people to read it, because we need to, don't we?
Absolutely. I think that we need to be having a much wider involvement of people discussing the result of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission and our legacy of colonialism. And I don't believe people have any right to involve themselves in our public discourse if they haven't first listened to the truths that have been expressed.
So I haven't started reading it yet, but I will do so shortly. How many people have done like I've done and pledged to read it?
I'm well over 1,000 now. We're up to 2,500.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're talking on the 20th of April, and that's quite a great number. I mean, it'd be great if it were double that. Some of the people not named specifically, but sort of the kinds of people, do you have a sense of who those people are who have pledged to read it?
I generally do, and what has happened, I believe, from what I can tell, is when I first started, sending out the message primarily through Twitter, I did have a few sort of, just through my own networks, some Canadian authors pledged, some people from the CBC pledged, and what I found is when they retweeted, I then had quite a large number of people that were, for instance, law professors, people mm-hmm. I didn't think would, partake in this, because I, to be honest, I would have assumed people like that would have already read it.
Yeah.
And then what happened was the CBC did an article on it, and that's when it ballooned, and it seems to me now that it seems to be more just general citizenship as opposed to, people that might be more well-known to us.
Mm-hmm.
And now what's happening, I find, is that I'm getting a lot of contact. A lot of libraries are contacting me, and they're starting reading and discussion groups at a local level. And so really it's become, something that started online and was disseminated online to something that's becoming more face-to-face and local throughout Canada.
Yeah, I'm reading Carmen Aguirre's new book in the last couple of weeks as I've been reading your novel, The Heaviness of Things That Float. And in it, she talks about the stuff that she and her family went through in Chile during the Pinochet regime. And she comes to Vancouver, in her college years to study at Langara. And she would talk about this with her classmates, and none of them believed her until they read a UN report on it. And it took that for them to believe what happened to her. And I think reading the TRC's report, I think would, I mean, not a lot of us are agnostic about what happened, but I think it's just, it makes it more real, if you will.
I agree. And I think that, you know, the difference in this report, I've read, you know, over a decade ago, I've read other Royal Commission reports that were done.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference with this one is the weight given to the first-hand account that this was a testimony. And previous attempts at documents like this were, you know, summaries only of, you know, of interviewing government workers. And so, to me, this is, like you say, people will not only put more weight in it now that they read it, but better yet, they're getting a first-hand account.
Yeah, indeed. So, your novel, The Heaviness of Things That Float, at the heart of it, is the relationship between the First Nations and non-natives. I mean, would I be correct in saying that?
Yes.
And why did you find it was important to explore that as a theme in this book?
Well, I think because two reasons for me. One is, which is contained in the central message of the book, which is basically try to know the other, but never assume to know the other. And the assumption is where, you know, the dangers in harming our relationship, you know, where those occur. And it was really important to me to pass along that message that, you know, when you assume to know the other, which I think a lot of non-Indigenous people in Canada unfortunately do assume
mm-hmm.
to know First Nations people, whether it's positive or negative. And but when you do that, you take the risk of misunderstanding your truths for someone else's. And so that was the first reason. But for me, ultimately, this novel, at the heart of it, it's a novel about decolonization. And for me, I started to think that, you know, our legacy of colonialism is not going to simply fade away on its own. It's not a matter of waiting for time to erase it. And nor is it correct to think that Indigenous peoples are the only ones who need to be decolonized. You know, non-Indigenous people need to actively insert themselves in the process, and they do so of decolonization, and they do so on a personal level by confronting these legacies, by confronting their privilege in our society, and by questioning these deeply embedded beliefs that non-Indigenous ways of knowing and seeing and being are somehow superior. And lastly, by acknowledging and honoring how interconnected the relationships are in Canada between Indigenous peoples and non-Indigenous peoples, instead of pretending that there is little connection there,
mm-hmm.
as some people do. So for me, that was the driving force behind wanting to give, you know, an obviously non-Indigenous perspective to decolonization.
And the reaction you've had from people who've read the book, I mean, it's been quite positive, hasn't it?
Yes, it has, from both First Nations and non-First Nations people.
Yeah. Do you think it was the right time to talk about these sort of issues in the discourse?
I do. I think that it's still, nevertheless, whether it's the right time or not, it's obviously still going to be a tricky thing.
Mm.
But I think that why people have responded positively to it, I think, is because I wrote it with an honesty and an obvious awareness of that potentially, like, it's a first-person perspective, right, narrative.
Mm.
And so I wrote that as first person so that it was made clear that the underlying message is that her perspective is still flawed. I mean, that's what she comes to realize. And that's the underlying message of the book, that this book, too, will be, unbeknownst to me, writing it, will still contain assumptions from our legacy of colonialism that I'm, as much as I try to be self-scrutinizing as I wrote the book, I still will not be aware of. They still need to be unveiled to me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's the right time, but it's also, it's the right time to be honest and question things in the right way. You know, and the last point I'll make to that is, in one of my short fiction pieces that was also set in this area, a character said that there are two types of questions. There are questions intended to understand, and there are questions intended to destroy. And I think that I wrote this book with questions intending to understand, and that's what makes it fit at this right time.
So the central character in the book is Bernadette, and as I mentioned in the introduction, she spent, 40 years in, mm-hmm. living near this reserve and serving as their nurse, is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah, and so what's the relationship that she has as a non-native, say, with the people who live on the reserve? I mean, she's their nurse, but is it a close one?
Yes, it's a very close relationship. In fact, it's so close that she perceives herself to be fully a member of the community. She perceives herself to be family, and in fact, she's often been told, delivered that message from the community, that she is family. But the issue is that no matter how generous with that sentiment the community might be, there are still differences that separate her.
And so she's, as you've alluded to already, she's made assumptions about the relationship she has in her place in that community. And so mm-hmm. so as she retires, what are some of those feelings that come to surface, say?
Well, the primary one is that she recognizes the main thing she forgot, which is her privilege in society. And overall, what she recognizes is, you know, this question of, can you truly belong to a community if you hold a completely different set of choices than the rest of the community? And, I mean, therein lies the difference in our society, right, between non-Indigenous and Indigenous peoples. We will have privilege, as, you know, speaking as a non-First Nations person, we will have privilege so long as we continue to hold a completely different set of choices, and so long as we continue to have a potentially very different fate in our society. And so she at first, you know, goes through that itchiness of not wanting to face that because she wants to belong fully. And, you know, over the, you know, without spoiling things, mm-hmm. she's forced to face it and accept it, which she, you know, mostly does.
And what's the relationship with Chase Charlie?
Her relationship is...
He's a young man, right?
He's 33. He's a young father.
Mm-hmm.
He's a young father. So she delivered him at birth in the outpost. She essentially, because of some, some unfortunate incidences that happened to her in terms of a love relationship she had in the community for a long time... She lost her chance to have her own child with this person, and she essentially comes to love Chase as a son, wishes he was hers,
mm-hmm.
and goes through a time period when he was about 13 that he actually, for a series of reasons, lives with her for about 6 months, which she considers to possibly be the happiest time of her life. She also helped him immensely through his schooling. She had certain visions for him in terms of his future, and so she essentially feels like she was a surrogate mother to him.
And so he goes missing near the front of the book, and
mm-hmm.
and we learn more as the book goes on, right?
Yes.
What I was struck with in reading the book and starting it was this idea of the remote community, and because if you go up and down this coast, there are a lot of them, And we tend to overlook that. I mean, I live in Vancouver, so, you know, I tend to think that British Columbia is pretty much this, right? But there are communities like this throughout the province, and you do a marvelous job in giving us a sketch of those. Where you live in Duncan, I mean, does that inform, say, what you write about or where you write about?
Well, I mean, what informed it was my time teaching in communities like that. And, you know, prior to teaching on in a community similar to this, one in the book, I also taught in the far north of British Columbia in a place called Dees Lake, which is 7 hours either way from any other community. That was even more remote than the one in this book. And that's just it. That's another impetus for the book, is seeing, you know, experiencing these communities that have, you know, a wealth of positive and negative things going on due to the remoteness, and coming back to places like Duncan or Vancouver, and nobody is, you know, very few people are very, you know, really aware that these places exist, and they have largely negative ideas about life in those communities.
Yeah, and what also struck me was just there is culture isn't the right word, but there is a great sense of community, and that's something that we overlook, because we just think of just people living because they want to live far away from other people, but there is a community there, as small as it might be.
Absolutely, and that makes, like, for how tight-knit the communities are, that's what makes it. You know, people say, well, you know, if you want to go to school, just, you know, university, just leave, just go away. And we discount, or at least diminish, the psychology that holds for young people that try to do that. It's very difficult for them to leave something so tight-knit.
Yeah. Yeah, and it goes back generations sometimes for some people, right?
Exactly.
Being in that place. The idea of belonging, as we've already touched on that, is something that you explore in the book. For Bernadette, because she's about to retire, and I guess the plan for her is to leave that community and live elsewhere, is that right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and she finds as well that she is in this space, this floating space, if you will, to borrow from the title of the book, that she doesn't know where she belongs.
That's right. I mean, she's lived there long enough that you do, from my experience, even if you've lived there for only a few years, you know, my experience as a teacher, I even felt uncertain, well, where would I fit in a larger school system? Or, you know, it doesn't take long to be, you know, living in a much smaller, much isolated place to feel very disconcerted at the thought of going back to larger centers.
Yeah. It's I mean, even though I live in Vancouver, these are feelings that I'm thinking about, because we can be isolated anywhere.
And, absolutely.
Yeah, and it's whether you make the time or the effort to connect. Regardless of how big the community is, you'll find those connections. But if you don't, well, you feel isolated. I mean, a lot of us in Vancouver are isolated at the moment because of how bloody expensive it is to live here.
Right.
Yeah. This is your first novel. What's it like to have it out there now? I know earlier this week you're in Vancouver to launch the book.
Mm-hmm.
Has that been a fun experience for you?
I've enjoyed it. I was very nervous. Like any writer would be putting something out there. I found I was more nervous than I anticipated being because of the nature of the book. I mean, it is, you know, like you said, it's potentially coming out at a very good time, but it is also imbued with politics around this issue, right? So overall, though, I've really enjoyed the process of getting to talk to people. At the two launches that I've done, one here in Duncan and the one in Vancouver, probably the most memorable moments for me was one person at each of those launches came up to me after my reading and said that the parts I read made them realize how erroneous their thinking had been about First Nations people. And that was probably the most, you know, rewarding thing I could have heard.
In terms of your own thinking, because you talked about being circumspect as you wrote this, at the end of it all, I mean, did you find that whatever perspectives you might have had changed at all?
I'm not sure if they changed, but probably just more cemented. And I think, you know, I couldn't. It took me a long time to write this book. I mean, I've been working with First Nations people for over 20 years, mm-hmm. and I've made a lot of mistakes along the way. But I couldn't write this book, I don't think, until I became more honest about my own ignorance. And so in exploring the various themes that I wanted to explore, honestly, the end result is that it only cemented that truth that no matter how much we think we know, there's so much we don't know.
And you've written short fiction in the past. You've won awards for it. One might assume that the short story is just a novel shortened. Conversely, a novel is just an extended short story. That's not the case in terms of the actual practice of writing, is it?
No. And that was a difficult thing for me to adjust to, is this concept of a larger narrative arc that needs to, you know, cover the entire span of a novel. It took me a while to grasp what that meant, what that looked like. But once I did, I think I actually enjoy writing the novel more than the short story because of how you can weave certain questions that, you know, others would call them themes, but, you know, certain questions I had that I wanted to explore and how you can return to those over and over again throughout the course of that larger narrative arc.
And do you still teach, or?
I'm not teaching now. I'm only writing and trying to get people to read the TRC.
Yeah. I pledged to start this weekend, actually, because I haven't had time to. Yeah. And so if you go to the TRC Reading Challenge website, trcreadingchallenge.com, I've pledged to do it. I haven't really sent out a tweet, and I should do that I have pledged to do it and challenge folks to do that as well. How do we report on our progress, say, and is that in terms of how many pages we've read of the report?
It'll be according to the chapters.
I see.
That's the easiest way. And so there'll be a progress bar. There'll be a very simple, this has come, June 21st.
Yeah.
There'll be a very simple, login. It'll take you, 10 seconds sort of thing to click which chapter you finished. And your progress bar will be public, on the list of pledged names. So your progress bar will be next to it. And it's still, it's on the honor system, obviously, but, this is about honoring. And so it's also, people will then, you're holding yourself accountable. If you've challenged anybody, I know some people have challenged politicians, for instance. You can see how the people you challenge are also doing. Having said that, it's not a race. People can take as long as they want to read it.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the commitment. And given the weight, it is a draining read at times because of what's being discussed.
Yeah.
And so I think it's important that if people need to take their time, they take their time.
What, because you mentioned 2,500 names already, and I can only assume that'll grow as we get closer to the 21st of June.
Mm-hmm.
After we read it, I mean, I'm looking forward to the discussion that'll happen.
Mm-hmm.
And is there
yes.
a place for that, do you think, on the website, online, elsewhere, say?
I think there will be a place for that. And what I decided to do was not in any way, even to myself, prescribe that in my mind, mm-hmm. because I wanted to allow, and it's starting, and, you know, I mentioned the libraries and whatnot, it's starting to grow that people are starting to email me, you know, talk amongst themselves about ways that they might like to see this discussion, a discussion process come out of this. And so I'm sort of, you know, waiting to see how that evolves because, you know, there's going to be people out there who have much better ideas on that regard than I do, and then we can take it from there.
Yeah, what I'm looking forward to as well is just that after reading the report, it'll give us a language, say, or a vernacular to mm-hmm. talk about these things a little better, easier, if you will.
Exactly, I agree. I mean, as, from a teacher's perspective, that's exactly what's needed is a, you know, common language to
yeah.
talk about something.
Yeah. Well, Jennifer, you're doing valuable and important work, and I can't compliment you enough on it, as this is your first novel, good luck with this book, and congratulations on its publication.
Well, thank you very much.
The book is called The Heaviness of Things That Float. It's published by Douglas and McIntyre. TRCReadingChallenge.com is the website to learn more and sign up for the sign up to read the Truth and Reconciliation Commission summary report. Jennifer Manuel joined me on the line from Duncan, B.C. in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.